Hey everyone, this is Gordon in Austin.
And this is Jack in Stockholm.
And this is Build Phase. How's it going?
Good, how about you?
Oh, very good. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been ages. All that whole holiday season. All that jazz.
Did you have a good holiday? They do Christmas in Sweden?
They do.
I don't know if that's just a States thing.
Nope. That is not just an American holiday. There's not as much like house decoration here by any stretch.
Sure.
We have, I guess, 5 different strings of lights up, 3 in the front and 2 in the back, and that's the most anybody on our street has.
Okay.
So it's just not a lot. No. But there's a huge amount of like tradition around Christmas and things they do here and what they eat and exactly what people eat. Like families have very strong traditions about at this time on Christmas Eve, we eat this. Like it's very sort of specific. It's like clockwork. And then there's one really weird thing they do on Christmas Eve in this country, in Sweden. They watch TV a certain time of day. They watch a particular Walt Disney cartoon thing. It's really strange. It looks like it's made in the 50s, I think. And it was like, they took some clips from some Disney movies and made like a little Christmas presentation out of this.
Okay.
This is something that, you know, is probably shown on TV in the US at some point too, right? In the 50s. But like here it became like, oh, wow, that's the thing. That's Christmas Eve. That's what we're going to do. And they update it. So usually every year they swap out one bit for whatever is like the current new Disney movie. Like they'll insert a couple minutes of that somewhere at some point. But it's really bizarre. Like you had this hour from like 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Christmas Eve that, you know, probably a solid third of the country is sitting watching this.
That sounds so much weirder than I'm sure it is in reality. But like none of that seems normal at all.
No, no, totally weird.
I thought you were going to say that like the whole country sat down to watch the Doctor Who Christmas special or something like that. But no, this is just like a thing.
Right.
That's bizarre.
The Doctor Who Christmas special would make more sense.
Yeah, it would. There are a lot of things that would make more sense. What is this thing? Can we link to the thing in the show notes? Do you know what it's called? Can we put it? Is there a YouTube?
I'm sure there is. I'll dig it out and find it.
I want to see this. Because it sounds bizarre to me. Like, I guarantee you what is going on in my head right now is, like, way weirder than what it actually is. But, like, it is weird in my head right now. Just, like, clips from different Disney movies jumbled out of order.
Yeah, that's totally what it is. Like, it often has some that are, like, little Disney shorts. Like, this thing with Ferdinand the Bull. You familiar with this?
Yeah,
it's vaguely. Like a bull, like, sleeping under an oak tree. He doesn't want to fight. And stuff. Okay. That's always in there. There's always a snippet with Donald Duck on some sort of bird watching safari, trying to take pictures of birds, which is in itself weird because he is a bird.
Right.
Like what?
Right.
And like he's trying to take photos of birds and there's one super annoying bird that's always getting in his way and he's doing everything he can to fight this bird. It's kind of like, it ends up kind of like being a coyote roadrunner sort of thing. Like he's fighting this bird. And it's just super annoying and super stupid. And there's a thing with Mickey Mouse and Goofy and Donald Duck on some sort of little road trip with like a camper driving up a mountainside and like just like all this like stuff that I'm sure seemed hilarious in 1947.
So this is less random clips from Disney movies and more like individual cartoon skits kind of a thing.
Yes.
Like one little bit of... Like a Roadrunner. I know not Roadrunner, but like you said Roadrunner and so now that's stuck in my head. But like one of those little scenes or like, you know what I mean? Like one little bit.
Sort of. Some of it is these little shorts, like the Ferdinand thing, which is a self-contained thing. And then some are like, here's a clip from Lady and the Tramp.
Like
one
so
scene
weird.
From Lady and the Tramp. One scene from the animated Robin Hood where Robin
None
Hood is
None of these
a fox,
movies
you know?
That you're listing have anything to do with Christmas, by the way.
No.
Like, I just want to point that out to make sure
nothing
that that's
clear. Nothing at all. The only things Christmassy in here at all are there is a little clip that I guess was made for this, which is you see a bunch of characters kind of sitting around, like they're sitting around a tree or something, like Christmas tree, and Jiminy Cricket is singing When You Wish Upon a Star. So that's one. And then there's the thing.
But it's not like a clip from Pinocchio? It's like a different thing where Jiminy Cricket, or was it Pinocchio?
I think it's different because I think it is like Christmas tree going on and stuff.
Okay.
And I think there are more characters sitting around, so I don't think it's from Pinocchio. And there's like a Santa's workshop, which is like a bunch of toys being made and they all jump into the sleigh or jump into the bag to be carried off to children. And that, I guess it's a Disney thing. It's very, very old. It looks like it's from 1920. It's super, super old. And so like it has no recognizable Disney characters, but I guess it's a Disney animation. So that's Christmassy, right? And that's it. Nothing else in here is Christmassy in any way.
I am fascinated by this. And the whole country watches it? The same thing every year?
I mean, not the whole country, but
most of the country.
Easily 30-40%.
Oh, okay. So a significant portion of the population.
Yeah. Like on 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve, you turn this on.
At 3 o'clock, like just...
3 p.m.
Like that's a weird time to do it, too. Like, why at 3 p.m.? Was it shown at 3 p.m. originally? Is there like a legend about something that happened at 3 p.m.? Like some curse that happened and the only way to ward it off was to like watch these cartoon clips at 3 o'clock?
I hope so. That's actually, that's what I'm going to tell myself.
I'm trying to find some reason in this. I think there is none.
No, there is none. I mean, traditionally Swedes have Christmas Eve off as well as Christmas Day.
Okay.
As well as the day after Christmas Day. So it's kind of a 3-day holiday no matter what. And Christmas Eve is when a lot of the stuff happens here. That's when everybody opens their presents and they have a big, you know, big meals and that kind of thing. So I guess that's whenever this thing was first shown was on Christmas Eve. And they probably said, well, hey, let's squeeze it in the afternoon before it's time for, you know, the evening news or dinner right. or whatever.
Because they
and
were so, like, this is stupid. No one's going to watch a bunch of clips of random cartoons at 3 p.m. Right. on Christmas Eve. Why would anyone sit down and do that?
And yet.
I get it.
They do. Yeah.
That's
pretty wild. And this thing is a big point of discussion every year because sometimes they make changes. Like sometimes they'll, like one year they might skip Ferdinand the Bull and like
ooh, people, and people get up like
people,
in,
yeah
people get so up mad. In arms
right because it's so outraged.
So this is aired live. This isn't like a recording that people have, like no one shows up. I'm assuming it's going to be on VHS if it's on anything, like someone pulls the VHS of this recorded out of their thing and sticks it in the cassette player at 3 p.m. This is a thing that's on TV.
Yeah, it's on TV. It's on like public television, you know, the main channel that everybody has. And there's always like a host or a hostess who is live sitting in a studio somewhere and like they're dressed up nice and there's a beautiful decorated studio with Christmas things and they talk a little bit and say, oh, hey, everyone, glad to have you here with us again this Christmas Eve and welcome to SVT's Christmas celebration, da da da. And then they always light a candle and like it's always, and this is also a point of discussion. People are like, oh, this new host is terrible. I like the one we had the last 15 years. This new one has no clue what's going on. It's not the same Christmas anymore. It's like, wow. So weird.
This might be the best Christmas present I've had in years, is just hearing about this. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's seen as totally normal. I remember the first time that I was here for Christmas and my wife, we weren't married yet, I think. No, we weren't married. It was before we were married. But I was here and she's like, oh, yeah, it's time to watch Donald Duck. I was like, what? Why? She's like, yeah, well, Christmas Eve, you know, we watch Donald Duck like everyone does.
I think one of my favorite things here is that it's very clear that you are borderline indoctrinated into thinking this is normal, but you're not quite pushing. Like, this is a thing that you definitely do every year, but like, you're not pushed over the edge far enough to think that it isn't totally weird.
Right. Yeah, like, it's a habit, but it's a habit that I know is nonsense.
Right. You sit down at 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve just shaking your head going, like, I can't believe I'm going to do this again for the 15th year in a row. This is very stupid, but...
Yeah, pretty much. And, like, my own personal tradition is that I sit down to watch this and I fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
And this is also, you know, within our household, part of the tradition is that my wife will say, oh, I guess you guys are all going to fall asleep again.
Right.
And the kids and I go, yeah.
That's awesome. I want to know so much more about this.
It's like cats, you know, cats that sort of like they'll develop a habit that makes no sense because this is just what happened last time. And so I guess this is what's happening again now.
Right. Fascinating.
So that was an hour of my Christmas anyway.
It's a good hour, though. That's amazing. That's so good. I don't know how to move on from that.
No, I know. Maybe we're done.
Oh, God. Okay. Do you think we can get people from that public TV channel on the show to ask them more? I have so many more questions that I don't think you could answer.
I could maybe find somebody. I could see if I could dig it.
Let's work on that.
Maybe I could find someone who's an expert.
Let's work on that.
On this television program.
Man. It should be like a big episode we can get Mark on to. It can be all three of us and we can just ask every question about what is this? Why does it exist? Why does it exist the way it exists?
Right.
Why 3 p.m.? Why still 3 p.m.?
There are a lot of questions and someone has the answers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to dig into this.
Cool. Please do.
Investigative journalism.
It's what we're known for, right? That's like our
calling card of this show.
All right. I really honestly have no idea how to follow up on that.
Okay. How was your Christmas? Did you have any bizarre rituals that you do all the time for no reason?
No, not anymore. I didn't. Everything I did is totally normal in comparison. No, I don't know. I don't have... My mom hates Christmas. That makes her sound like the Grinch or something. My mom says their two favorite days of the year are the days she gets to put Christmas decorations up and the days she gets to take them down. So it's always like there's like a lot of tension in the house around like when is my mom going to start ripping down all the Christmas decorations and throw the tree away.
Hmm.
And like it's been as early as late Christmas morning before where she's been like, okay, I'm done now. She just like it's all gone. So that's kind of fascinating to watch. But no, other than that, before you got into the video thing, I was going to talk about this other, are at least familiar with Texas. Are you familiar with Johnson City, Texas?
I don't think so. Where's that?
Central Texas. It's between here and Fredericksburg, which is my hometown. So it's like kind of middle of the Texas Hill Country.
Okay.
Johnson City is, they say that it's the birthplace of Lyndon Baines Johnson, mm-hmm. LBJ, President of the United States, but he was actually from Stonewall, Texas, which is a little ways away.
Okay, but is it named after him, though?
I think so. I think that they renamed the city Johnson City, so I don't know any of this for sure. But anyway, there's a company there called the Purdenalis Electric Company, and I might be able to upload some photos if I can figure out how to do that, but they do these lights at the electric company where they have these trees that are covered in lights. Like it's every inch of every branch is lit up and it's nuts. I mean, it's so bright underneath it's all these LED lights. Almost all of them are all white, except for there are like two trees that were in blue. And so that like ended up being a thing. Like when I was a kid, we used to just drive up there and see those. It's about 40, 50 minutes from my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Johnson City lights were like a thing that some people did, but it turned into, it's like a big tourist thing now. They have like hay rides around there and like vendors set up and stuff like that. It's like turned into a big thing. Because I haven't been in probably 10, 15 years. So we did that. And then other than that, I just kind of like hung out at home. I wrote a Swift web app, if we want to talk a little bit about actual technology.
Oh, right. That's what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
Almost
not
forgot.
Just two friends catching up. No, it's...
We actually have kind of a theme here.
No, but I wrote like a very simple... I'll put a link to it in the show notes because it's open source. But super simple web app that is written in Swift. It does very little. The idea was my wife has one of these that I got her for her birthday last year, and my wife got my mom one of these for Christmas this year, but it's like this journal that asks you a question for the day, and it's like a very short thing that you just like write a very simple answer for.
Right.
But then it's supposed to take you 5 years to complete this journal. And so what it is it's 366, right? 365 plus one for leap years. 366 journal questions. And so you just go from January 1st to December 31st, and then you start over again. And so as you're writing every year, you can look back on what you said the year before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And write like your answer this year. And so it's kind of like an interesting way to like see change over time, right? Over like 5 years,
right.
That's not nothing. So I thought this was an idea, but I wasn't going to write on paper because it's 2016. No, it's not. It's 2017. And that's even more crazy. I already used day one for kind of like keeping track of, I just had to actually dismiss it. Day one popped up on my screen asking me to write about my work day because it's 4:30.
Wait, so I have day one just on my phone.
Yeah, I have the Mac app too.
Okay, so actually it like pops up and reminds you to do stuff?
They have a menu bar application, and from there you can write a journal entry, and you can also set reminders so that it'll pop up and you can have like template, so you can actually pre-fill, like show me a reminder at this time with this prompt and this default text and these tags, put it in this journal, all that kind of stuff.
Hmm, nice.
It's kind of cool. I love day one. I think it's a fantastic app.
Sounds like a good way to remind yourself to write down what happened at work today.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Things that you might remember later. What did I do with that client on Wednesday 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Like, whereas if you wrote it down, you know, take 5 minutes to write it down, you'll remember.
Yeah. I use it less for like trying to go back and remember exactly what I did, but more as like a introspection on the day, right?
Because
like a lot of times at the end of the day, I'm like, God, I did nothing today. But then if I sit down and write and say like, okay, let me walk through my day in my head and kind of say, oh, okay, I did this and this and this and this. And it's like, oh, okay, I wasn't unproductive today. Here's where my time went. You know, when you have those days where it's like, how the hell is it 5 o'clock already? Where the hell did my time go? I don't feel like I accomplished anything. I don't remember just doing nothing all day. Like, I wasn't just sitting in my chair staring at my computer, but I don't know where it went.
Something happened.
Yeah, so it's, I like it for that. I like it for kind of like helping me recognize when I have been unproductive and why I've been unproductive, or recognize that I have been productive, right?
Sure.
Anyway, so I already used day one for this, like, journaling in general, kind of like introspection. I left, not left Twitter, like, I'm not totally done with Twitter, but like, I took a break from Twitter before the holidays. I was getting like super depressed because it's just been so angry and so stressful on Twitter recently that like, I was like, I need to walk away from this for a while.
Sure.
Deleted the app from my phone, quit it on my computer. I think I put the news or something in its place so that like, if I was reaching for something, my muscle memory is like, unlock the phone, top left corner. Now I hit, I have my workout app up there now. So like,
okay,
it's like, oh, I guess I should do pushups or something because I have my workout app up. Anyway, like, I'm using day one a lot for like things that I would normally just like yell at Twitter. Right. I now like, if it's something that I actually want to keep long term, I will write those same thoughts into day one. So I already used day one and I enjoy day one. And I liked this idea of kind of introspection over time with like consistent questions. And day one actually has that built in as a feature now. Every day you get an alert and it'll tell you like, you have this many entries on this day, and you can like tap into that and you can read through things that happened to you kind of like on this day in history over time. It's cool. So what I did is I wrote like a little bitty web app where first what I did is I took my mom's journal. She hadn't written anything in it yet. I took my mom's journal. I sat in front of the TV at my parents' house with like my computer and her journal. And I rewrote every question out of her book into like a markdown document. Not even a markdown document, just like a plain text document. It took forever.
Yeah. Because you got to hold the book open, balanced on your leg while you're typing this. Yeah.
I would open it and read two questions because it's like one per page. So I'd read two questions and then put it on my lap and then type those two questions and then open it, turn the page, read two questions. And I just did that like, what, 150 times? 130 times? No, 180 times. Anyway.
Yeah.
So I hand transcribed everything over into a text document. Then I turned it into JSON, where the key is the month and the day. So like, today is January 5th. So the key for today's entry is 01/05.
Okay.
And the value is whatever today's prompt is, which I can actually pull up. Today's prompt, for example, is, I need to wait for Heroku. What was the last restaurant you went to? So I transcribed everything in this kind of like simple JSON format. And then once I had that, I wrote a very simple web app that I could run locally. I initially wrote it with Katura, which is IBM's open source Swift server software.
Right.
And I ended up refactoring it to use Vapor instead.
Okay.
I just liked Vapor a little bit more. I don't remember what it was in Katura that I was running into that was causing me problems. I think it was templating. I think Katura's templating support, I either was having trouble figuring it out or it was more limited than what I wanted. Like, I don't think I could do partials, or I specifically don't think I could do embedded partials. So I wanted like a main layout and then just say like, this part is different. So render this part, but say that this little part always gets rendered in this bigger part, you know?
Sure.
I don't want to repeat like the head or,
yeah,
you know, a footer or whatever. Like, I don't want to repeat that stuff. I just want that to be consistent.
Right.
And there are ways you can do it in Katura. Like, I was using Stencil, and Stencil can do that kind of stuff, but it's hacky where you embed a head, but the head will include like the opening of the body tag. And then you have like a footer, but then the footer has to include the close of the body tag. That's not what I want. I want to just say like, here's my whole main layout, and then just put this little bit here in the middle.
Yeah, you want to have a nested document structure for the templates and not something that is sort of cobbled together.
Yes. So you can do that. Vapor uses kind of a markup language that they call Leaf, and you can do things like extends base. So I can say this extends base, and base has to be a Leaf template that does these things. And then inside I could say extends base, and then I could say export main. And now it assigns like whatever is inside that exports main block to be the main content. And then in the base, I just say render main, you know, okay. So it like dumps the main thing in here.
Right.
So I wrote this little thing that basically just, you hit the root, you know, it got the date with NSDate, and it said, okay, today is this, format it so that it's just month, day, and then print this prompt on the screen.
Okay.
And then I realized at about 7 p.m. after I got it, like, I got it shipped to Heroku, and it was, like, published on Heroku, and then at about 7 p.m. I realized that this wasn't going to work. Because at 7 p.m., whatever server Heroku is running, the day changed to tomorrow. So my prompt locally changed. So then I had to figure out in JavaScript how to do this. And what I ended up doing in JavaScript, which is kind of interesting, is that I added the ability to like pass a specific date as a param in the URL. So if you want to see like tomorrow's, you could do the root question mark date equals 01/06. And that will show you tomorrow's prompt. So then what I did is in JavaScript, it checks on the client side. It says, what is today? And it figures that out. It formats it. And then it actually performs an AJAX request back to the root with the params, gets that HTML, pulls just the main div out of the HTML, and then replaces the main div on the page with whatever came back from the server.
Cool.
So I was able to reuse this functionality I already wanted of being able to like jump forward or back and like show an arbitrary prompt. I was able to reuse that and just exploit some JavaScript and some DOM hacking to replace whatever was on the page. And then I just added like a simple CSS animation to make it fade in, which now makes it look all consistent because it's fast enough that it doesn't take very long.
Right.
You do see it like flash into place as opposed to just show up. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
Now it fades gently.
So which enormous JavaScript library did you use to do this magic?
Oh,
and
no.
Which huge CSS framework did you use to make?
None. I used no CSS frameworks. I had to pull in jQuery and jQuery UI to do a date picker, which was crazy to me. But like there was no other good way to do a freaking date picker. So I use those for a date picker.
I think actually jQuery is a pretty reasonable way to also do DOM manipulations afterwards.
Yeah, I think I could change that code now to use jQuery, but I don't know jQuery at all. I barely know JavaScript. So I haven't like relooked at this. And this is all just like a hack anyway. And so the other big part of this is that the thing that I wanted to do is like getting the prompt is great and I could copy and paste that into a day one entry. But day one actually has a URL scheme, which I didn't know until I was on the day one blog and they had like this 10 questions you can ask yourself at the end of the year. And there was a button at the top that said like create entry in day one. And when you click on it, it created this new entry in day one with those questions listed. I was like, hey, this is perfect. So I added, there's a button right underneath the prompt that says create entry in day one, like on my thing, and it works on the Mac and it works on iOS. So every day you just go to this website and then I can just click create entry in day one. It creates the entry the way I want, where it's like a quoted string, you know, it like creates it as a quote and it puts it in the right journal because I have like these kicked off into a different journal,
right?
Like a daily Q&A journal.
Cool.
So I was able to do all that. So it's kind of nice. It wasn't the project that I wanted to do over the holidays. I wanted to work on a Haskell web app, but something is broken with Haskell or with GHC and or macOS Sierra. I'm unclear on what the combination is there, but something is broken that is causing me to not be able to do anything. So this was a good follow-up, and it was like nice and simple, and I was able to like deploy a Swift app on Heroku and it's like up and available. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Nice.
It like works. It's kind of nice.
How is Heroku deployment for Swift compared to other things?
Dead simple.
Same.
Dead simple. Unbelievably simple. It uses Swift Package Manager. So, oh, that's one thing about Vapor that I really liked is the tooling around Vapor is much, much better than the tooling around Kaltura. Kaltura has a lot of like copy these three dependencies into your package.swift file and then write, you know, you have to write these exact things. And Vapor has like a Vapor new command, like they ship a CLI where you do like Vapor new or Vapor init or something like that. And it sets up like a little scaffold for you.
Okay, cool.
It's really nice. I can link to the commit where I change, or if I link to the repo, I'll link to the repo and you can see the commit where I'd moved from Kaltura to Vapor. And I think it cleaned it up nicely.
That sounds pretty neat. I should take a look at that. I have not looked at Swift for the web at all. I know there's been a lot of stuff in the past year plus, but
the important thing here is that it's not like a Rails level framework. None of these are.
Right.
These are much more like Sinatra level frameworks.
That's what I was going to say. Sounds like Sinatra level.
Yeah. I think it works really well for that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's worth the overhead is questionable. Like, if you look at the amount of code in my little stupid little prompt thing,
mm-hmm.
Swift being there at all is questionable. It's not leveraging anything inside Swift that
right.
makes it, like, nothing about Swift made that better to write in any way. So I'm not convinced that any of these are...
In terms of developer time to build this sort of thing. And I guess what you built is simple enough that maybe it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But, like, say you were building something that was 10 times as complicated. Would this be better or worse than writing the similar thing in Sinatra, say?
I don't know. I think that there's still a long way to go in tooling. Even though I said that mm-hmm. like the tooling's better, there are things that I would really want. If I was going to be serious about this, if this wasn't a little hack thing that I can do over, you know, a few hours,
yeah.
If this was something I was going to spend a lot of time working in, there are big things like live reloading.
Mm-hmm.
Or even worse, if I run like vapor serve or vapor run serve, whatever the command is to run the server for vapor,
mm-hmm.
it just runs the server in place. So if you have made changes but not explicitly rebuilt and you run vapor run serve, then it doesn't rebuild anything. It just runs the server. So that actually happened to me at least once where I was like, wait a minute, I made a change here and it's not, why does this look the same?
Hmm.
This should at least be broken. You know what I mean? And it was like, no, it's still working because it's still running the old version.
Right.
So having these tools, like these tools need to have some kind of live reloading thing for this to be reasonable, you know?
Yeah.
And it's possible. Like, Yasode is the Haskell mm-hmm. version of Rails, kind of, is simplifying things, but you get what I'm saying? Yasode is a Rails level framework. And the Yasode server command does, you run Yasode devel, and it watches the file system. And when you make mm-hmm. changes, it recompiles the app and reserves the app. So, like, these are things that are possible. The tooling just isn't there yet.
Right.
But it's pretty important for something like this. Like, I honestly think that it's pretty important. You want to just run the server and not worry about it and just make your changes and see them compile and...
Right. And I think that that would not even be especially difficult. I mean, it's pretty easy on... At least, I mean, if you're running on a Mac, I know how to do it. It's pretty easy to watch the file system, watch for files that changed,
right.
you know, the file system events. And it's okay, any of these files that are in this project that I know about, anything that's in a .swift in this directory changes, I'll rebuild and I'll pipe the output to where, you know, where the server is running. So if there's an error, you'll see it.
When you run Swift build... That's the build command, right? Because this is all using Swift Package Manager. So the build command is standard.
Yeah.
All you have to do is run Swift build. And for Vapor, doing Vapor run serve is just an alias for running the serve command against the built binary, against the target that was built from Swift build.
Mm-hmm.
So Swift build builds like .build/develop/ app, right?
Right.
And so vapor run serve is basically just an alias for .build/develop/app/serve. So starting and stopping the server should be relatively easy. So now it's just a matter of, like, instead of just passing that through directly, saying, okay, well, now this serve command is going to be wrapped by this thing that builds the server and then runs it. And then when, if it sees file changes, kills it and then rebuilds right. and then reruns it.
It may not even need to be wrapped in something. It could be in the same
binary. Know.
Again, I imagine this running on a Mac. Heroku is a different thing. But this is all for development purposes, right? So you're doing it locally. You're running on a Mac. You could build in a little bit of code that registers for file system change notifications, just like you can do with a Mac app.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could have a special mode that you're running this in, development mode, that would include that stuff. And so when you launch it, it just happens to also register itself. It has, you know, extra bit of code to watch the file system.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, kill and restart itself, you know, redo the build and kill and restart itself.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely doable. It's just not there yet. And I assume that part of the issue around it not being there yet is just how much interest is there really? Not how much interest is there, but how much actual work is being done
using this tool,
using these frameworks right now. I'm a member of the Vapor Slack team. team. Mm-hmm. And there are, I don't remember how many users there are, but I was shocked by how many users there are, because there are way, way, way more than I would have initially guessed. And I think there are actually more users in the Vapor Slack team than there are in that iOS folks Slack channel by like an order of magnitude, maybe.
Wow. Cool.
There are a bunch of people in this Vapor Slack channel. Actually, maybe they have it. They might have one of those stupid badge things.
Are some of them maybe just people who are confused? I think it's about vaping.
That's possible. So right now in the Slack, according to the stupid badge thing on their GitHub, there are 157 people online out of 2,180.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. That's way more. Like I said, that's way more than I assumed. So I think there's interest in this. But my question is, like, how many of those 2,180 are doing real production work with it?
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to know how many people are. You know, I bet somebody is, right? I'm sure somebody is running something in some capacity in production. Yeah. But
I mean, if I look at the list of projects on the Vapor documentation, there's like the Portland Cocoa Heads website, the site for Vapor, a URL shortener that is just on Heroku. And they're using free dynos. I can tell because it takes forever to load.
Right.
There's like a dashboard. So it looks like a number of things on here that are like examples, right? Like Vapor example, Slack bot, Swifty bot, you know.
So there's some stuff out there.
There's some stuff out there, but I just, you know, none of these stick out to me as being like, oh, that seems like a full-blown high-level application with like user accounts and multi-user authentication and like all that kind of crap.
Yeah, like all the kind of thing that you're used to in a Rails application.
Right.
And particularly, you want to have some sort of database backing things, and who knows if that is a bit, I mean, there's probably something, but, you know, I'm sure it's miles away from...
They actually do. Vapor has, I don't remember what the terminology they use is, but they have these kind of like provider things, and you can like hook it up to like Postgres.
Okay.
You know, so you can definitely hook it up to a database. I don't know how mature those things are. My assumption would be not very, but I don't know.
Not exactly like time tested, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad, but just it's unknown.
Right.
And my guess would be that probably all of this stuff, when it's actually up and deployed, is probably way faster than the corresponding Ruby app would be, right?
That's they have some performance statistics on their website too, like on their actual website, I think, which is vapor.codes, which is neat. Yeah, I don't know.
I guess, you know, for the kind of simple sort of toy apps that are up there right now, maybe it doesn't really matter, but...
Right.
You know, again, if you have something that you're going to need to scale up, I think we're past the old Rails can't scale myth. But there is a point where, you know, the fact is that Ruby does run a lot slower than compiled code of any language. And Swift has a pretty good chance of being at least reasonably as fast as something like Java in a general case, if not even much better than that. So
the big thing is just going to be concurrency support, right? Like Ruby doesn't actually have it, like as far as I know, right? Like it has...
Right.
You can do things to kind of like get around it, or you can do cumbersome ways of getting to like different threads and stuff. I don't know enough about this to be pretending to talk intelligently about it, but but like Swift comes with GCD, you know what I mean? So like you're going to hit, you can just do concurrency out of the box from all intents and purposes, you know, it's just right there. It's like talking about Erlang and Elixir versus Ruby. It's like, well, you can just like spin up different processes at will and just have them communicate to each other.
Sure.
With no, you know, very low latency. So yeah, that's going to be a little faster than having to deal with all these, you know, workarounds.
Right. That's one of the things that I remember kind of drove me nuts doing Rails work a long time ago was I had something where somebody was going to upload something. And there would be some processing of it, if it was an image or something. Some processing is going to happen after they uploaded. But they didn't need to see a result immediately. I just wanted to be able to upload and then get a results page and see, you know, upload successful, whatever. And so the solution to how to make that happen is you could either upload and then actually do the processing in the thread you're in and wait for it and then give a results page. Or... upload and put the thing you uploaded in some kind of queue, make a record in a database saying this has to be dealt with, and you have another background process that sits and watches that queue to see if there's something that has to be done. And I'm just like, wow, this is crazy. Why can't I just, I've got a thing. Can't I just start a new background thread to work on this thing and then give them a result immediately? It's like in Ruby, it seems like you just cannot do that.
Right.
And it was really, really frustrating. It's like, wow, I have to do so much extra stuff to do this simple, simple thing, you know, make a thread. So that could be nice.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I think that it's interesting. I don't regret spending time screwing around with it because it was just, like I said, very dumb, very simple. Like, it's literally reading a JSON file, naively forcing that into a Swift dictionary. Like, I didn't even pull in Argo or anything because it just wasn't worth it. And then shoving it onto a web page. The most complex stuff is actually all happening in JavaScript, which was really disappointing to me to all of a sudden be like, oh man, I tricked myself into doing a JavaScript project.
Damn it.
I think it's definitely worth playing with and trying because, like, the deployment stuff was, like, dead simple. There's a build pack. Vapor has their own build pack that is based on Kyle F., whose last name I never remember. Kyle Fuller, who's done just a crap load of really cool Swift stuff. But he has a Heroku build pack that Vapor has forked. I'm unclear on if Vapor's is different from his at all, but I just used their build pack. The Vapor build pack, and it just worked. Like, it kind of blew my mind. I was very much expecting to have to do some kind of, like, spend a bunch of time hacking around bugs or something, but I set up the build pack, I pushed to Heroku, and it appeared. It builds very slowly. Like, it does seem like the build pack or something could do more around, like, dependencies. Like, it rebuilds every dependency every time you push it, which doesn't seem incredibly smart, but it works, and it was painless, so.
Cool. I'm going to take a look at that. Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah. I'll put some links in the show notes.
Nice.
I did not mean to talk about that for 40 minutes or whatever, but...
No, I think we talked about Christmas television programming in Sweden for at least half that time, so it's fine. Okay. That's the core message of our program.
Cool. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm working at a client where I was doing some native iOS stuff for a while and have now switched to a separate project within that client doing some Unity work, which is fun because I haven't done that in a long time.
That's cool.
That's pretty cool. Just been back into it for a few days. It's very, very different from native iOS stuff in a lot of ways.
But, yeah, for sure.
But I like it. It's always a fun thing to dip back into.
We've actually gotten into more Unity stuff here recently because of Steph, one of our Android developers. Steph Kelsey in Boston does a lot of Unity stuff. And he's basically been booked on Unity projects nonstop for like the past 6-8 months.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, before he was working on the Nova Black Holes app.
Yeah.
That was the last I knew.
Yeah, that shipped, and he's worked only on Unity stuff since then.
Okay.
And there's a growing contingent of maybe not Unity, but 3D and VR people inside ThoughtBot, specifically in like the San Francisco office.
Okay.
One of the designers out there just published a like beginner's guide to Maya.
Oh, to Maya, right. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that, and I saw that she mentioned in there Maya LT, which I'd never heard of, which is the cheap version. You can pay like 30 euros a month, which sounds, I mean, it's a lot more than free, but it's still a lot cheaper than what Maya used to ever cost.
Right.
So it's a good way to be able to sort of dip into it if you want to sort of try Maya out for a month. You don't have to pay $1,000. You can pay 30 or whatever. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I don't have much news here. I can tell one thing. I finally got a new MacBook Pro with the Touch Bar, and it doesn't have, you know, it has the non-escape key, and guess what? I'm not even angry.
Have you even noticed? I definitely feel like it's one of those things where most people would probably just get a new MacBook Pro, never use the Touch Bar, not even notice that it's there.
I mean, you notice the Touch Bar is there because it changes when you're doing stuff, even just if you're in Terminal. Whatever's the last command you typed, it gives you a little button with the name of that command. You can tap that and bring up the man page.
Does that work in Tmux? I bet not.
Probably not. I have no idea.
My workflow tends to break things.
So the Touch Bar is noticeable because it's fluid. It moves a bit. It changes. But I feel like it changes to the extent that I'm... It's just kind of a bunch of more buttons. It's like, okay, what does this button do? Oh, I can't even like hover over to find out what it does, right? Like, like you go to mail and like, okay, now tip, I've got these six buttons. I can say, okay, that's clearly delete. That's clearly send. What is this thing that looks like an envelope sort of? Is that like to move it somewhere? I don't know. So it's, I don't know. It's,
I wouldn't touch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't touch it. Don't touch any of those things. It's fine. I think it will get more interesting with time. I think once more apps can build more things. Like, for instance, I was talking to this other developer on this Unity project, and he was saying, yeah, it'd be cool if, you know, if Unity would have some interface there where, say, you could sort of tap something and slow down time in your game, you know, adjust the slider to adjust like how the world time is changing, just for, you know, why the hell not? It'd be an interesting thing to put in that touch bar.
Mm-hmm.
So like right now, for instance, the Unity app has just nothing going on in there. And most of the apps that I'm using don't, you know, if I'm in Unity or in Chrome has nothing, Slack has nothing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that gets used.
And so far, I've only actually been using that computer for a day or two. And actually, most of that time, I was sitting pairing with the developer on his computer. So I had very little actual experience to go on. But so far, the computer and its lack of ports and its lack of an escape key has not made me angry.
Good to hear. I'm glad.
I know you were super worried.
I've been just staying up all night worrying about, oh man, is Jack going to hate this new computer?
How angry.
Yeah.
Oh, so angry.
Cool.
All right.
All right, man. Wrap it up?
Yeah.
All right. Show notes for this episode are to be found at buildphase.fm/116. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at buildphase or via email hosts@buildphase.fm. And as always, we love ratings and reviews on iTunes.
All right. Thanks, man.
Talk to you later.
Yep. See you.